That's another point about being an adult. Do you need permission for anything? You give yourself permission. Empowerment can be measured by two things. Permission and authority. So if you give yourself permission to do anything, you don't need any other permission but your own. You're not a child anymore. What does authority mean? Notice it starts with the word author. You're the author of your own life. It's not about being above somebody else and building them around. It's being about being the author of your life. You are shaping your life. That is authority. If you're shaping the life the way you want and you're giving permission to do so, that is empowerment. So when people talk about living an empowered life, that's really what it breaks down to. If you're not doing that, you're not being empowered. You're not being empowered by blaming somebody else. Not being empowered by not being responsible for your impact. Because you're not in control of your life then, are you? You're carrying the same defective patterns which produce shame. So yesterday we were looking about giving other people a shame back. Now you've got to look at forgiving your own. Recognising your mistakes, acknowledging, forgiving and changing. It means to be responsible for impact. It means being an adult emotionally. So how does the child get stuck? Very simple. When a child doesn't get it what it wants, it digs in its heels and refuses to move. If you do that all your life, you stay emotional as a child. That's what people haven't grown up. Easiest way is to go back and give your child what it needs. Quite often you're stuck there because you didn't get what you needed. A child needs perfect love. Never finds it. You realize when you come to this world, love isn't perfect anymore. It's got these human limitations around it. But the child is seeking perfect love and never ever gets it. By the time you got to adolescence, you've given up on perfect love and you want perfect understanding. The adolescent needs to be right. And they'll practically die for their cause. That's where martyrhood comes from. So the child is naturally a victim. The adolescent is naturally a martyr. So if you're still stuck in this pattern of self-pity, emotionally a child, it's because your child didn't get what it needed. So in your meditation, you go back and give the child the love. Whatever form it needs it. You might have this memory of a child being neglected. God might give you in a child loads of love. And that can mean many things, how the child wants the love demonstrated. Extra pocket money, extra sweets, beating up its bullying neighbour, letting it stay up late and watch television. You know, within reason, but you know, it's a case of feeling, making the child feel loved in its own way. This is what you do to your in your own process when you're dealing with your inner child. Give your own child love. Because when the child has got enough love, it'll let you grow up. It hasn't got enough love, it's stuck its heels in and refused to move, so you don't grow up. The adolescent's more complicated. It's always trying to be right. You give up on love now. By that time it wants perfect understanding. It needs to be right. The best way, they never give in and will die for their cause. They'll do anything as long as they'll stick in the heels and put up with any kind of pain or martyrdom or anything, just to be right. Because at that stage, you're actually trying to build your worth. And that's measured then by being right. And this leads to martyrhood. And that's when you start feeling misunderstood, unappreciated, and overburdened. Anybody ever feel that way? That's martyrhood. That's the adolescent.
These are all connected to inadequate love, to not having been loved.
Yes, and we all have that. Because in this world, love isn't perfect.
Nobody's been loved.
It's really, actually, for some of you talking, I'm actually seeing it, so like, digress again. How nations tend to be that. Within nations.
It's because the people haven't grown up.
Yeah. It's like, you know, newer nations tend to need to be loved and vindicated, and like, nations who've been around for quite a long time tend to be more, I've got to be right, and I'm sticking to my views, I'm sticking to my opinions, mm-hmm. and
martyrhood.
So forth. Yeah.
Start with the individual level, they will grow up. Stop healing them in a child and in an adolescent.
So can you explain a bit about, because yesterday you were saying you can't change the past, so how you're kind of giving love to the inner child?
Because it's inside you now.
Yeah.
Past doesn't exist really. But it's in you right now, that's where you can change it. The child and the adolescent are inside you right now. Heal them and you change. So the adolescent is a part that's being a martyr. When you're being a martyr, that's when you're overburdened, misunderstood and appreciated. And you really look at that. Why do you do things to people who don't appreciate it? Why do you have to keep doing things and then saying it's your, you don't appreciate me, get angry about it? Why do it from the first place you don't appreciate it? Underneath, like, this pattern of martyrdom, which is righteous anger. Martyrdom is really silent and righteous anger, seeing silent and righteous punishment. When you're being a martyr, you're trying to punish somebody, and it's not yourself. See, when you ask somebody, you know, why are you trying to punish, they say myself, that's a typical martyr's answer, because to a martyr, the impact is always on you, not on the other people. No, it's always somebody other than yourself you're punishing. It might even be God. Like it was that film Bruce Almighty. Mm-hmm. Janet got, this is all your fault, you lousy creative, you know. You think you can do it better. So you're trying to prove that God's a bad creator, and that's how anger comes out, and that's what gives the martyrhood.
Can you talk up a bit again? Yes, please.
So with martyrs, you know, quite often you're angry, and you're trying to punish somebody silently through your anger by saying how useless they are. And this might be God. Not that God can be wrong, but we have these concepts of God. You've got this idea of Christianity where there's this God up there trying to punish you and make you think all right if you're good. Well, that's not how God works. He doesn't reward you when you're good and punish you when you're bad. That's a little childish attitude, trying to how you control children through, you know, for their good and bad behaviour. God doesn't work that way, because we're all God. We create. You have to be responsible. You don't get rewarded when you're good and punished when you're bad. People do that, not God. Now, if you've been good in your life and still not getting good things, it's no good blaming God. He never really promised those things. Or she, whatever you want to see God as. So it's no good shouting at God and saying you're a lousy creator because I haven't got what I deserve. Deserving itself is a false issue. It's something else you learn as a child. When you're a small child, you help yourself with everything you want. You grab your mother's necklace one day, then throw it away and get the next thing. You don't care. You have everything you want. You just explore. Gradually you're taught you don't deserve that. Then you go through life not earning anything until you're actually made to feel that you deserve it. This deservability is false. The reality you create is not a product of your deservability, but of your willingness. Willingness. It's about will. But if you don't have to deserve something, you only have to be willing to have it. So if you're trying to receive something, be willing to have it. Don't try and deserve it. Because you're playing an ego game there. You don't have to deserve anything. Trying to prove you deserve something is still following that same dysfunctional pattern. Trying to prove something that's not provable. But trouble is, when you don't feel you deserve, you're all feeling you're not willing to have, that's a problem. Instead of actually trying to play this game that you try and deserve, just remind yourself, you don't have to deserve. Just be willing to have it. You don't have to be good. Bad people can create too. The whole thing about being good and bad is what's taking us away from our real conscience. You make mistakes, you don't feel good, that's why you don't do it again. You forgive and you change. Somebody else telling you have to be good or bad to earn a reward or a punishment is not letting you develop conscience. It's not letting you be an individual.
If you're getting stuck in the pattern of making the mistake and
that's because you've got shame.
Seeing it and not being able to change it because you're stuck in
shame. You're stuck in shame, yeah. Shame is often there because you've got this false conditioning about what's good and bad. You're trying to be good instead of dealing with the shame. Maybe because you're bad before, you're trying to be good now. That's trying to fix the past. If you're trying to fix the past, you obviously haven't forgiven it.
Sorry?
If you're trying to fix the past, you obviously haven't forgiven it. You can't fix the past, it's gone. You forgive it and you create a different future. That's all you can do. The past doesn't matter once you're creating a better future. That's what's important. So obviously, hopefully you want a future where you're not making the same mistakes and feeling the same crap. So you have to give and move on instead of trying to fix it. You can't fix the past or vindicate it.
Can I just backtrack to when you said about the child deciding to be right?
Mm-hmm. That's the adolescent.
Was that in reaction to what? Because I didn't hear it.
Well, by the time you get to adolescence, you give up on perfect love and you want perfect understanding.
Yes.
That's the next thing you want. Once you give up on love.
What's the motivation for wanting to be right on adolescence?
That's the need for understanding. People have to see things your way.
Oh,
okay. We all want love and understanding, don't we? Mm-hmm. But the child wants perfect love and the adolescent wants perfect understanding. That then turns to righteous anger. Because when people don't understand you, you get angry and want to punish them. But if you keep doing things for somebody, to try and show how good you are and how bad they are, so every time they don't appreciate you, telling how horrible they are and how their karma is going to catch up with them, you know, because it's always seeking vindication in the future. Come the glorious day when all your karma catches up with you, you'll be sorry. That's silent anger. It's not punishing them now, it's always wishing them horrible things in the future. Exactly, religion teaches a lot of this, doesn't it? That's coming from this false idea that you have to be good in order to be rewarded or punished. So then when people are not being good, and when you're not appreciating you, you think they ought to be punished, and you have all this silence and righteous anger going on. And that keeps you trapped in this pattern. Step out of martyrhood, simply first ask yourself, who do you want to punish? Deal with the anger, and you'll stop being a martyr. Anger too gets hidden. Let's look at what anger hides as when you don't want to feel it. First of all, guilt. Guilt is anger that you don't have a right to have. Simple as that. See, for instance, supposing I was going to... This is an example I use, can't think of anything else right now. If I was going to pick you up in the morning and they didn't turn up and you were left stranded there. My first response is anger. Anger with myself, not being angry with yourself for burdening me. But I don't have the right to be angry because you're the offended party, not me. So I feel guilt. Now, the person who I didn't pick up has every right to be angry. He doesn't feel guilty if he's totally pissed with me. So the anger you feel when you have guilt, or the guilt you feel when you have anger that you don't feel you have the right to. The only way to deal with guilt then is to be angry. Whether it's with yourself or with somebody else or with a combination of the two. That's what's happening behind it. There's a whole situation where you feel burdened that you failed at. And you feel angry about it. You're angry with yourself, you're angry with the other person. So you're now the anger and the guilt's gone. Also, worry is future guilt.
Worry is praying for a negative future.
Now, worry is there when you, because in the future you're going to have anger that you don't have a right to.
Mm.
That's why you worry.
Mm.
It's future guilt.
Can you explain that a bit more?
Well, what I'm worried about is that maybe a few days' time when I'm going to do something, I'm going to get something good to be angry and I won't have a right to it. That tends to worry. It's future guilt. That symbol held emotion transform. Right now, if I'm angry about something I don't have a right to, I'll feel guilty. If I'm afraid that in a few days later in the future there's something that's going to happen that's going to make me feel the same way, I'm going to worry.
So you're worrying about yourself suffering from guilt. Is that right?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what the worry is.
It is. It's future guilt. If you don't have guilt, you don't have worry.
You have a pattern of going through that guilt cycle and you're worrying about
exactly.
It in the future.
Once you stop feeling guilt, you stop worrying.
What a terrible state to live in. That's what my mother lives with.
Yeah. Common when you look, isn't it?
Yeah.
People worry and they feel guilty all the time. And the more they feel guilty, the more they worry.
Yeah.
And they don't.
I mean, for instance, at the moment there's a man playing with a chainsaw out there. And there's a situation where spent quite a bit of time doing that. And you have to basically qualify it. But you also need to fill in something called a risk assessment form.
Yes.
Which, before you do any action, you have to ascertain what the possibilities are of it going wrong. Remind yourself.
Yes.
Of what the negative situation could be.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, from
wrong,
your professionalism, you know it's going to turn out all right.
Yeah, you go, yeah.
So,
that's not actual.
No, but no, this.
That's being.
Yeah.
Well,
no, this is the complication of an authority telling you how to act instead of using your own conscience and your own wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that's like, you know, same as when I talk about our own growth. Somebody telling you how to be and to be rewarded or punished is taking away from conscience where you make a mistake and it doesn't feel good, so you change. We develop conscience through an experience. Same way people try and tell you how to do things instead of actually listening to your own wisdom and your own experience. It's the same thing in a different way, in a way. Because the central government wants to control everything. They want to make you be a little cog in the wheel and be the same as everybody else. This all goes against individualisation, you see. So what you're saying, as an individual, you trust your experience and wisdom to make the right decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fun as you go along because
everything is that way when you
experience comes and shows you things.
And that's how all life is, yes.
You learn from lessons.
That's how all life is, and you find the central government is taking that away from you in many forms. By trying to control you. They're trying to tell you how you ought to be because they want everybody to be the same. That's why everybody has the same rules of driving. You have to drive at the same speed, and it's no difference whether you're old or young, whether you've got quick reflexes or slow reflexes. There's no driving according to your own experience of safety.
Worry relate to people worrying about the state of the country and the government then? How in that model?
Because they will feel guilty in the future because they didn't do anything about it. Quite often it's the emotions you're left with that really bother you, not what happened. Mm. Something's happened and basically you're left with emotions. Emotions are a huge part of our experience of life. We're emotional beings. You might have a beautiful day, but you still feel horrible because something happened a few days ago. It's the emotions that make that turbulent in your life. If you go through life with worry and guilt, you're never happy. Things that happened already happened, you can change. You know, they've gone, you create a better future. But the guilt and the worry are interfering with how you're creating your future.
Well, this is actually where authorship and responsibility come in, isn't it? Because you sit here and say, for something, as you said, about happening in the future, you can see, say, there's... in the future, this situation is going to occur, and then you can worry about it. Or you can say, okay, this is how it looks. Where am I now? What skills do I have? What skills do I need? And then adapt accordingly and become responsible. But if you don't adapt and become responsible, then you sink down into worry. Because in a way, what's happening is you're setting yourself up for something that you didn't take any precautions for, and then end up feeling guilty and responsible in a negative way, and it continues the downward cycle.
Yeah. No, that's not what responsibility is. Remember, responsibility is to respond.
That's what I'm saying. You can respond to what you can see in the future, as in you can take responsibility and respond and develop what you need or you believe you need to be able to be empowered.
When you look at the future, though, the first thing to ask yourself is, who's creating this future? It's not somebody else, it's always you. People try and tell you it's them. The government likes to tell you they're creating your future. Try and take all the power from you, but you still create your future. There's lots of energies around trying to change that. But, you know, if you're not measuring the world as impacts anymore, but as resonance, you don't actually have to fight those influences. Let's look how resonance works. There's many waves. They combine to produce a certain standing wave pattern. Your whole life is basically a standing wave pattern. You put out one of those waves, the standing wave pattern collapses.
What?
You put out one of those waves, the whole standing wave pattern collapses. You put in a new wave, and you've got a new standing wave pattern. It means you don't have to be responsible for every single wave that's coming in. You only have to know what to produce the standing wave pattern you want. Impact is telling you you've got to stop all these fitted balls coming because they're pushing around. But it's waves. You have a standing wave pattern. You don't have to stop every wave coming in. You look at the overall picture. Which little resonance is going to change this to create the standing wave pattern you want? A lot of people don't do that because they're still measuring the world as impact. Force. To make this, allow this happen, I've got to stop that. To make this happen, I've got to force this. No. You've got this whole kind of open system with things pushing around everywhere. One little thing can change the whole resonance. That's magic. It's not done by force, it's done by resonance. It's not done by force. Okay, well, I started yesterday by talking about this pattern of evolution based on Prigogine's work with open systems. So if you've got this open system, everything interacting within it, there's a certain pattern set up. Things from the environment impact upon that and change the resonant pattern. If too many things come in, the whole pattern's overwhelmed, it totally breaks down, then it'll be organised at a new level and create a new pattern, which is then coping with that impact. This is how evolution works. This is similar to the open system, can be similar to the pattern of your life. You've got a certain resonant set up, and things impacting upon that, changing the resonance. Okay? Now, you don't have to stop every single thing and say, go and get rid of those and start from scratch. You simply have to put new influence to change the whole resonance. So you get the pattern you want. And it's coping with all these different influences coming in. And you're still creating a reality. So when we're stuck causing impact and fighting everything, we think we have to stop all these other things because we think they're stopping us from creating a reality. but they're not. You still create your own reality, but you've got to look at what you've got to work with. All those things are there, and you're going to create your reality anyway.
How do we know how to tune in to get that missing frequency?
By letting yourself go through change in a natural healing process. These things overwhelm you. You break down and reorganize at a higher level. These things overwhelm you, and then you break down and reorganize at a higher level. It happens naturally by allowing the healing crisis. In that healing crisis, you keep a goal, your future. Here's a future I want. I'm here right now. I'm going to go through this healing crisis and get to here. So I'm telling you to write down what you want. You have a definition, a direction to it. This is what I'm creating. All this stuff's here. I'm going to go through this healing crisis and break down and reorganize at a high level where I'm now creating this. Doesn't matter what illness is out there, I'm still creating my reality.
Does that mean like that by keeping the focus on your future that you're changing your resonance?
Yes, because every future is a double quantum wave. Every experience is a double quantum wave here in the future. See, what you're creating now isn't really a result of all these impacts coming in. It's a result of all the futures you're resonating with. Any moment, you've got loads of different possible futures, all drawing your attention. And as you give them attention, you feed them and they grow. And they try and draw upon your attention more to take more of your energy. It's as if there are living things competing for food. The food these things get to grow is your attention. It's why you talk about paying attention, it's costing you. You pay out your energy to it. So pay attention. So if I'm giving you attention now here, because you get something, you're listening. Same with with all your futures. The ones that get attention, the ones that grow in. So it's not enough to do with your past, that's gone. What you've really got is impossible futures around you, which you're feeding. And it's good to know where you're going. Look at the negative possibilities already out there. It's like self-pity, as I said, is all to a future-orientated. Because you have a future where you want to manipulate and control and avoid responsibility, and you're feeding that. That means you're not going to be successful, because that self-pitying future can't be successful, because if you're successful, those are going to feel sorry for you. So you're in self-pity, you're feeding this negative future all the time. You're holding on to this future where people feel sorry for me because I'm useless, and I can't fail, I'm in pain. Therefore, I'm devoid of responsibility, and that's the future I'm creating in self-pity. So the more you feel self-pity, the more you're feeding that future. Oh, yeah, and you can find that future over here when I'm creating this abundance. They're both there competing for attention. Which one's going to get more? You have to direct it. Say, this is the future I'm creating. Therefore, I'm going for this healing crisis. All that's creating this self-pity is going to be broken down. So I'm going to have this future, not that one. Right now, your present resonance is caused by all these different futures drawing upon you. All making you what you are now. You don't change yourself by changing your past. You make yourself different now by changing your futures. When your futures are different, you are different. Because your resonance is a combination of these futures impacting when you now drawing your attention. Each one is double quantum wave. You feed it, it feeds you. Your energy goes in the future comes back to you and gives you feelings.
Projecting with your own ideology your future energetically
When you think about it or not, you've got lots of possible futures. They're all drawing up, they're all trying to draw you.
But isn't that just going on the course that you'd be set on now, so they would all have.
Well, then the thing is, what happens is that when you're biting at the future, what you've created is a combination of them. Because they're all pulling you and drawing you towards them. To understand how to look at the future, you have to begin with self-reflection. Look at what's taking your attention and why. There are four components of self-reflection. Attention, intention, action, and image. First of all, you look at your attention. What's it on? So you look at your intention. Why is it on that? What are you creating out of this? And that's the difficult place where people don't admit the real reasons. As a very simple example, you might be looking at a relationship. It might be painful, it might be difficult. And I look at my intention. What's it on? Is it on the good things or horrible things? Because that's what's growing. If I focus upon the horrible things and keep fighting, it gets worse. So my intention is on horrible things. Now why? What's the intention? I might say I want to make the relationship better, but if I'm focusing on the horrible things, they're getting worse. They can't be my intention. So you look to your action and image. What do I do? What do I do when I'm in a horrible relationship and I'm feeling, focusing on horrible things? Do I be nice to them and make it better, or do I go away and sulk and be alone? Or something else? If my attention, if my action is to be alone, my image is then a recluse. I don't really want to make the relationship better, I want to be alone, that's why I'm doing it. Now there might be a reason for that. Go back to intention, what the layers of it, why do I want to be alone? Now I may need space alone to find myself, to heal or whatever. Why do I need space alone to heal myself? Well, what am I looking for? Maybe I just want to find peace. Maybe I want to find love. Ah, there you go, positive one again. It becomes convoluted. I might want love, but that's me, I need space to be alone to find myself first. Therefore I'm being alone right now, therefore I'm winning the relationship to be alone. That's why I'm focusing on the horrible things, and they're growing. So in order to sort out your futures, you've got to look at your intention along as to what you put your intention on. To every attention, there's an intention, an action, and an image. We'll work with this a bit more later, just don't let you right now, so you understand the relationship to the future. So all these different futures there draw your attention for a reason. Once you start taking responsibility inside you on the future you're creating, you deliberately put energy into that. And one of the first things to do is to go through the convoluted layers to get to what you really want. So you might look at these convoluted layers. Okay, I'm ruining the relationship because I want to be alone, because I want to find myself, because I want to find peace, because I want to find love. The big difference between looking for love and working on horrible things to be alone. It's got distorted, you can see. It's got the opposite. If we go back to the fact that I were looking for love at the bottom layer, it'll completely change what I put my attention on. It'll change your behaviour. But particularly the attention. It's the attention that you're feeding something with that makes it grow. Even if you don't have to do anything, just give your attention, it'll grow. So if you're putting attention on something negative, why do you want to make that grow? Look at the intention and go to the layers to find the bottom intention. And look at the image and the action which goes with it. The action obviously is what usually gives away the real intention. And it's also showing your image. What it's saying to the world about who you are. It might take a while to get around that. We'll work on that gradually. But the first step is to realise that cause is in the future, not the past. And that you do have to work on creating your future. And it's not about fighting anybody else, it's all about you. Where you're placing your attention, what different patterns you're fighting within yourself. So the overall resonance will form whatever the outside situation is. All those waves become part of the resonance you're creating and to help you create what you want. You simply have to take the environment into consideration. You're not creating alone on a clean slate anymore. You're creating within an environment which has to be taken into account. But you still create what you want in that environment. We are creators. That's the thing to hold on to here. It's not about fighting, it's not about impact. It's resonance. We create our future, but we're taking the whole into account. We're creating it with the present environment. That's all part of the resonance that's in the background. That's on which we're building our future. Of course, we're going to change it all when you change your future. Everything else around you, all this stuff you don't like, it's all to be changed. But it's there now. And it's part of your creation. It's part of the different futures that are calling you, taking your attention. So you start by changing the attention. And to do that, you have to be aware of your intention. That's why you have to clarify your intention and come back to defining what you want to create. Keep the future in mind that you are creating. I think that's enough for today, to explain that. Because you can put a lot more into the hidden agendas, that's why we don't create that. But start with that. What do you want to work on now in the process in order to deal with the anger and shame? You learned how to give shame back to others, but in the same time, the process, know how to give yourself your mistakes. And also know how to allow your anger so it doesn't turn to guilt. Let yourself be okay with those emotions. Shame will turn to remorse. Guilt will turn to anger, then you've got real emotions you can release. And in the process, you get more and more clear about creating more reality. So you want to add to your list, you can do it. It isn't just about the healing, it's everything you want in the future. See, healing is more than just not being sick. Look at how people, ex expectations get limited by the world around them. A lot of people think they're happy when they're at the weekend, not at work anymore, sitting watching television. Mm-hmm. Happiness is ending all the pain and the struggle.
Mm.
That's not really living, is it? In order to heal a serious disease, you have to want to live.
Mm.
How are you going to really want to live if you've got no life? Like the only positive things is when the pain stops, when you're sitting watching television and numbing out. You have to live an empowered life. What is it to actually create your reality? Know your creator and keep creating it. There's a constant dance of creating a reality all the time. You create one dream, then it's the next one to create. It's not just getting one thing and then let's say, oh God, I can rest now. No, create something else. It's a constant dance. It's like you want to try and get rid of the disease. Well, what are you going to do next when you haven't got that disease? How do you really want to live? What have you got to live for that's really worth living for? What are you going to create? How are you going to use your power? You won't get just overcome a disease without a reason. To actually live, to live an empowered life. Therefore, don't be limited. Don't think your only goal now is to overcome a disease because that's all you can see because the whole disease is taking your attention. Just ending the suffering. When there's no suffering, then what are you going to create? More suffering because that's all you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you think that part of the reason why our society is so sick is that a lot of us don't really know what we really want or know, have a meaningful
huge part of it.
Life?
Yeah. Talk something else about the thyroid gland, apart from the anger. It's also linked to your expectation. Expectations have been lowered, that's the problem. Now, this is a particular pattern with breast cancer. See, when your thyroid goes low because of lack of expectation, you run more on adrenaline. When thyroxine is low, adrenaline is high, estrogen gets dumped into the fatty tissue and causes the tumours. It actually begins with the thyroid gland through lowered expectation. A lot of people have lost their visions of life. They don't expect anything good anymore. It's not enough just to try and be better if you haven't got your vision of life, of what you can create, and what you expect. Can you expect all these positive things, or do you expect life to be crap all the time? So you've got to reach and stretch in those expectations again. Now, expectation is the most difficult tool to work with. We've got three basic tools of creation. Desire, imagination, expectation. You're born with imagination, we've all got that tool. And out of that imagination, we start forming desires. Then we also have to start to learn to expect things. And that's where it breaks down. We can all desire and imagine, but then your expectations get messed up. What happens then if you've got good desire and imagination but have low expectation? Because it's painful, you start lowering your desire, not wanting much anymore, because you don't think you're going to get it. Mm. What you really should be doing is using your desire and imagination to back up the crumbling expectation. To keep the focus, knowing we can create. And getting rid of all these secondary creations which says you can't. All the past failures and pains and things which come up when you start your process. They've got to be discreated so you're free to create what you want. Expectation comes and it builds the more you create. It's really hard to expect or create a miracle when you're used to a load of crap. But you build it step by step. You create one thing, gives you confidence, and you create something bigger, you get more confidence, and you create something bigger. Your expectation grows with your power. You've got to build it. So keep on creating. Little things and bigger things and bigger things. It's good to align your goals. You've got short-term goals, which you want now. You've got long-term goals, which you want in 10 years, whatever. You've got ideal goals, which you might never quite get to at the end of your life. They'll give you direction. They've all got to be aligned. Each short-term goal is a step towards your long-term goal and your ideal goal. Stepping stones, you still got a direction out there, where you're going, what you really want. And there's no time on that. When you've got an ideal goal, don't fall into this kind of self-pity because you don't think you can get there. Ideals you don't get to. That's what makes it ideal. How many people are looking for an ideal relationship? Is that one that doesn't happen?
That's absolutely great.
Write that down.
Yeah. The ideal is things which don't actually happen. That's what makes them ideal. Might have an ideal goal, gives you direction. You might not quite get them in this life, but you've got long-term goals and short-term goals in that direction. The ideal goal gives you inspiration. It's like the beacon out there that you work towards. And each short-term goal you gain is giving more inspiration as you work towards the ideal. So you have long-term goals and short-term goals all in line with your ideal goal. If you only focus on the ideal, you lose trust. You need to make those short-term goals in the meantime, which align to the ideal goal.
Yeah. What happens if you've got natural gifts and abilities in a certain area which you have a relationship with within yourself,
mm-hmm.
that is in dissonance? So it's contraindicated with... I mean, just thinking for myself, there's certain abilities I have that I feel spiritually that actually I've got a relationship that I don't feel fully comfortable with because there's been such a change in certain people at certain times because of something I've done that there's a conflict.
And yeah, it's about finding where your abilities fit in, really, isn't it? How to use your skills.
Is that? Because, you know, when you see the future, I mean, I feel absolutely petrified by some stuff that somebody said to me.
Ah. You come back to who's creating that future. I want to talk a bit more about that, because in our creation of a future, well, before we get to future, let's look at what we create when we first come into this living reality, what we have to create in order to cope three-dimensional time and space.
Can you speak up a bit?
We come out of this source into this limited three-dimensional reality. There's certain things we have to create to work with here. First of all, we create space. Space is there so you can lay it all out and see how it works. It's like when you first go to school and learn long division. You've got to lay it out somewhere until you can do it in your head. Then we create time. What is time for? Two things. First of all, it's the cushion between the thoughts and what they create. So you can see how it gets from A to B. If there wasn't time in between, every thought I had created instantly, there'd be chaos. But I'd be talking to you here and have a little thought about being in the Bahamas in the sun, and I'm gone. Kind of wins the conversation. I'm thinking, what would it be like if I fall under this bus? I'm dead. Too late to do anything about it, you know. We need time as a cushion. Secondly, we need time to have fun, and that's a big one. In the oneness in bliss, it's bliss, but it's not fun. You need time to have fun. That's why we create it. You're here to have fun. So don't let anybody tell you otherwise. People tell you here to grow, yeah, but how do you grow? You can grow through pain if you want to, but you can grow better through love, it's faster. What happened along the way, somebody stubbed his toe and said, what are you doing that for? And he said, oh, I grew through that, I'm better than you now. Oh, we better start hurting ourselves then. You can go through pain, but you can actually go more elegantly through love and joy. People forget that bit. You don't need pain to grow. But if you've forgotten to grow because you want to, you keep having problems to force you. So remember, you need time to have fun. You are growing anyway in this, because you've chosen to. But you create space to lay it all out so it works. You create time as a cushion and to have fun. You then create the past as a backdrop to explain your reality more deeply. It's like a backdrop to the theatre, to a stage. It gives more depth to explaining yourself. You create a present as both a feedback system and a playground. You create a future as a motivation. Now, to help you cope with all those things, you create this other thing called an ego. The ego's job is to take all this information, to give you a picture of your reality. Because it's too complex. We take all this input, if they haven't got any input put into a picture, it's just too much information. The ego makes a picture out of it. That's what its job is to do. What happens, though, when the ego isn't doing its job properly, these other tools we've created become our prisons. Time and space, there's never enough of, are there? Past becomes a source of all your problems. The present becomes a playground for your negative ego. Before you go out in the world, you have to make sure every possibility is covered because somebody's going to control you and you're going to control them first. The future becomes a source of fear instead of motivation. That's all because the ego is out of control. So let's reclaim those gifts, shall we? Time, space, past, present and future are all your tools, all your gifts. The future is a motivation. If it's a source of fear, you've got to remind yourself who's creating this. Don't create that. That's the ego's game. And the ego is stuck in certain places. It should be growing with us. But just like our inner child gets stuck, the ego gets stuck with it when you stop being responsible for yourself. The childish ego is all looking for information about getting enough. The child wants to get enough love. The childish ego in you is saying, am I getting enough love? That's what it's looking for. The adolescent ego is saying, am I good enough? It's image-based. The young adult is saying, am I growing and learning fast enough? The full ego should be saying, I am enough. But somebody stuck in the childhood and adolescent ego is where you get caught in victim and martyrhood all the time. Trying to prove that you're better than somebody else because the image-based ego wants to be good enough. Always worried about where you get enough love or somebody else is getting more than you. That's a childish ego. And these things which then lose control of these tools of time and space and past, present and future. So you're going to have to mature the ego along the way. But start by questioning these things. If your future is a sort of fear, then you ask, who's creating this? Your future should be a motivation. All the wonderful things out there that you're going to create, that you're moving towards now, that inspire you. Hang on to that one first. It's important. Then you start looking at all the crap that gets in the way. That's where you're going to heal. As I said, to live an impact, to heal is also not just to be free of a suffering, it's to live an empowered life. You have a good reason for living. You've got to have your future that are motivating you, that you're creating. If you look to the future and you just see despair, well, that's not what you should be creating. That's somebody else's idea that they've pushed into you. It's not your creation. Throw it away. You must always come back to your futures. And you build the short-term goals in the meantime through your process as you release all the negative in the way each time. Remember, when you do visualize something, allow the secondary creation to arise and discreate them. All the thoughts from the past which have happened. The only old creations waiting to be discreated. Finish them, they're done, then you can create what you want. So keep sticking to your future that you're creating, that motivates you. Your future should have lots of wonderful visions. Even if some of them don't happen because they're ideal goals rather than long-term or short-term goals. We've got to be there.
Aren't you sort of limited in what futures you can create if you're on a certain planet? Like if you're on a ship.
There is, but you know.
You can choose to jump overboard or carry on with the journey.
Yes, but you can decide what you're going to create on that ship. You can decide what you can create on that ship and how you're going to change things. And you don't give up. Because if you're not creating.
If the ship's destined to run aground, then.
No, you can change. You can steer the ship, you know. Don't forget, you can steer the ship. You don't have to let somebody else control it.
Yeah. Well,
you can always just hit him over the head and take the wheel yourself.
I guess it's how much control we have over our destiny. Or
take control. It's your life. It's your ship. That's the thing. You let somebody else run it for you. And this is what we do with their egos.
Well, this is. The planet is like a ship.
It is. We got and I said within that environment we still create our future.
Well, yeah, there's a tug of war, but
you step out of that.
Consciousness of everyone,
you step out of that because that's still the world of impact, Newtonian physics. We're dealing with the resonance. It changes the whole standing wave pattern. Whatever the environment is, you still create your future. But to understand that, you've got to step out of this world of impact or Newtonian physics.
Like futures,
but they work through resonance, not through impact. Multiple. They don't force each other to happen. You have a standing wave pattern set up, and all the different resonances add to that. And you change that resonance. It doesn't matter what environment you're in, all the different impact coming in around you, that still becomes part of a standing wave pattern that you can shape. You create the pattern of your life, whatever the environment. Even in a crap life out there, you can create the dream you want within it. You're not responsible for the whole. To a degree, you are, you have impact upon it. But you're responsible for your impacts rather than the whole.
So you're suggesting, just to press that, you're saying because we're part of this planet, we can create our future to a certain level of the limitation we're on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And there's other things that you're... And you're saying you don't. Is that
no,
right?
We're creating a reality in this Earth.
Because we are all in the room together, so...
Yes.
I could all just
but if somebody's not creating and you are, you're the one who's going to decide the outcome.
We're all creating planet Earth.
But some people not being responsible for that, they simply go to sleep. If you play consciously, you're far more powerful than the person who's asleep.
But let's say somebody decides they can walk on water, right? So one person on the planet is like, okay, actually, I'm not with a consensus reality, I can walk on water, therefore I can. Then
it's not quite that simple. You tried it.
But is that just because you're just part of the consensus reality?
You know, it's much easier to create the future you want than it is to walk on water.
Not that that's a great piece of information, but you could do something that was really useful, that you put a lot of energy in, that was worthwhile, that's out of...
Yeah. It's down to what you consider worthwhile, isn't it? And quite often we people look at things like walking on water, walking through walls, is avoiding what they really want. You know, I can create my own future. This is important. I'll create the life I want out there. So it's just, well, I can't be bothered. I'll just go and walk through this wall. That'll make me happy.
But
it doesn't really work that way.
But I mean, say for example, you know, like the Christ or whatever, I don't know whether that was actually, you know, in reality that occurred, but to actually have a reality that's beyond the mass consciousness reality, so having abilities because there's just that connection.
To a degree you are. We all live in a separate reality, really, but we agree on certain points because our essences blend.
Mm. So that would limit our future, as in...
The only thing that really limits your future is you. You know the double slit experiment in physics? They show putting a quantum into two splits and see where it's going to end up. Until it's been observed on the other side, it exists half in each slit. It's no one or the other until it's observed. I want to give the example of how that might work in the physical reality. Supposing you've applied for a job and you're waiting for the response to come back, yes or no. Till you open the envelope or read it, it doesn't say yes or no yet. Therefore, the letter comes, you can still do your visualisation to get the result before you open it. Because it doesn't say yes or no until you've observed. None of that out there you think is real is real. Nothing is there until you observe it. You haven't observed it yet, it hasn't happened. None of that is real. It doesn't matter what seems to be creating out there, it hasn't happened yet. Until you see the results.
If you're going for a job, the group of people over there that have made the decision, they know.
Now, see, they all live in separate realities. This whole world idea of competition is coming from Newtonian physics because of things about impact pushing each other along by force. As I pointed out, it's false. Look at this idea of metaphysics and creation and how it fits with quantum physics. In a race, if there's, say, 8 people running the race, they can all be winners in their own reality. Each reality, there'll be a second and a third and 5 losers. You creating a reality of a winner does not stop anybody else creating a reality of a winner in their reality. They simply exist in different realities. But because you think this world is real, you don't do that. But quantum physics is proving again and again that's how things actually are. We get caught in this paradigm, stuck in our consciousness, because we got stuck in this paradigm of Newtonian physics, which is totally disproven from the first place. Nobody thought that before Newton. But people seem to believe him and got stuck. He had this idea because an apple fell on his head. What was that? It was an apple fell on his head. Sitting under an apple tree, there's an apple falls on his head, and there's this crazy idea, and then that becomes physics. Stop and think about that. Who said this guy's a scientist? Back in the medieval times? Because he had this crazy idea that nobody has heard before. Because nobody ever measured world by impact until then. And even modern mechanics shows it is wrong. It doesn't hold in the laboratory. Quantum physics shows that causes in the future, not the past. You don't really have this reality of causes into effects and put things pushing each other along. It happens by resonance, through energy, by future creation. That's how things really work. Now people get stuck in this paradigm of Newtonian physics because they learned that at school. And you still think that's how the universe works, but it doesn't. You should know by now that doesn't work because you've tried it. Again and again and again, and it keeps failing. It doesn't work.
If you throw a ball against the wall, it bounces back.
It does. But that's whole reason why it does that.
That's a predictable.
It's predictable because you expect it.
Huh? It's predictable because you expect it.
It's also expectation. It's very hard to expect otherwise because that's how you fix your mind is. Matter is not solid. Science has shown that. It's like the only thing that somebody's falling through this floor is energy field is moving electrons because, you know, you've got little nucleus electrons moving around it, all this space. If you were to collapse all the electrons in the world into the nuclei, the whole Earth would be 1 centimetre across The rest is all space. Nothing is solid. All that's something from falling to the floor is an energy field of moving particles. There's nothing solid there, really. Now, you can take that nucleus and realise that's not solid either. You've got these proteins and neutrons with space between. So it's even smaller. I mean, that's a lot better.
Is this why they think 96% of the universe is missing to you?
It's way more than that. You consider the Earth is one centimetre across in its nuclei. You take that, but that's not solid either, because you've got protons and quark, the neutrons and protons and neutrons in space between. They're not solid either, because they've got quarks in space in between. Then those are not solid either, because they have neutrinos in space between. Then you realise the space between also consists of neutrinos, but consists of vibrating at a different rate. The only difference between something and nothing is the vibrator rate of a neutrino. It can become something one moment and nothing the next. So scientists studied why the neutrino becomes, say, an electron one moment, positron the next, and nothing the next. They found they always become what you expect them to become. The only reason this Earth is solid is because you expect it to be. Now, that's not a bad expectation, because it would be bloody chaos if it wasn't. So we have fixed expectations. Now, it's not really relevant, because what you're going to gain about the ball not bouncing off the wall? So a lot of these questions are meaningless. We get caught in these games in the mind, trying to understand the universe in a mental sense, but it is not the mind which understands. All this logic is a waste of time. It doesn't help you create your reality. It does help to realise that it is not solid, and that could be changed if you wanted to. But why bother trying to change reality of whether a ball is going to bounce off the wall or not, when you could be changing your future? That bit is easy. We can all demonstrate that. You get into metaphysics, you can change your future. If you come back to arguing that it's solid, you're going to stop yourself from doing it. It's an ego game. The mind is the most misused thing we've got. This brain has a great capacity. The purpose of the mind is to act as a searchlight to reveal your potential. Nothing more. Every other use is a misuse. People misuse the minds in this world a lot, if you look. You create all kinds of monstrosities out of it. You get caught in games to stop you from really growing, to stop you from creating reality, stop creating the things you want. And there's a lot of that if you start analysing it, so that's why you have to come back to intending what you want to create. We're creators, first of all. We get caught in silly games when you could be creating the future you want. And everything is a game when you look. This argument is whether the wall is solid. Science proves without doubt that it isn't. The only reason the ball bounces off it is because you expect it to. That's proven without doubt.
How's that proven without doubt?
Because in every single laboratory in the science, the reason they have double-blind tests is because consciousness affects the result. Otherwise, why do we have a double-blind test? When they study DNA, for instance, scientists leave the room because their presence changes the DNA. They have to let a machine do it all. Which means that nothing in the laboratory bears any relation to reality. Because in reality, you are there.
But as soon as they observe, look at the DNA, it changed.
Exactly.
So how can they know what it was before they looked at it?
They get out and let the machine do it. The machine tells them. The machine is only telling you what's there when your human consciousness is not present. What's the point of that? Because everything that affects you is impacting your consciousness. So knowing what happens when your consciousness is not there really has absolutely no relevance to you. Think about it.
So what is the definition of a solid? What is a solid?
It doesn't exist. It only appears to be because of the moving energy field of particles. It's a force field, really.
So there's a force field?
It's a force field, yes.
So they're looking for dark matter. What's that about?
It's not really about matter. No, that's not true. No, it's not that it doesn't exist. Whether it's matter or not is that the definition. Because what happens when matter is basically a curvature of time and space. First, it's a wave. Everything exists as a wave until it's observed. Observation collapses a wave into a particle. It becomes localized. A wave is non-local. So matter is only there once you observe the wave. Now, if you have enough of these particles collecting in a small space, the distortion of time and space is such that the escape velocity is greater than the speed of light. Every matter, every body has a gravitational field, which is nothing more than just a curvature of time and space. We call it gravity. All that's happened really is that in normal free space, you have the law of physics that every particle moves at the same speed unless acted upon a force to change that. Therefore, I think if it's changing, accelerating now, there's a force acting. Isn't really. With a space time curvature, so that acceleration is the norm. Something falling, you consider being acted on by the force of gravity. Actually, no. It's falling because in that curved time and space, acceleration is normal rather than constant velocity. So we have this idea then, because we once we did new physics, there must be a force acting. Gravity isn't really a force. It's a curvature of time and space, which acceleration becomes the norm. If you have enough mass to distort that time and space, the escape velocity of this body is greater than the speed of light. That's why I call it dark matter. No light can leave. Nothing can leave. Because time and space is so curved, everything is pulled towards it as its norm. Norm in that curvature is to accelerate towards its centre rather than to be in constant velocity or stable motion. This is curvature. Because the laws of space-time have been distorted by the observation of the wave into a particle. Which means it's all done by consciousness. Would be there if it wasn't observed. There's nothing but waves. Your consciousness is localised into particles, so dense bodies form, which have space-time curvature, which causes things to accelerate. In Newtonian physics, you call it a gravitational field. That's only an observation because it's convenient for a simple mind. So it appears that matter becomes physical. But there is no matter. There is no gravity.
And nothing matters.
Well, it matters. Well, the things do need to matter. You decide what matters, and you let them matter. And it's good to let things matter more sometimes, if they really matter. Because that's our creation. What does matter for you?
My children.
Okay. And what future do you want for them?
Pardon?
And what future do you want for them?
Many.
See, this is where you start looking at what matters. You might say your children matter, but in what way? Do you want happy children? They'll be fulfilled in their strengths and finding who they are and developing their power and their skills and everything, becoming whole. These things matter. If you let them matter, they matter more, then you have more power in that. Mattering is a part of our creation.
If everyone's an individual, everyone has their own sort of point of view, their own consciousness.
Yes.
So if two individuals are simultaneously looking at the same particle,
you find they like to stop agreeing.
Why would it?
We communicate, then we like to stop agreeing on certain points. Sorry? Because they like to communicate and therefore like to stop agreeing on certain points. But there are some things they won't agree on.
Well, the particle wants to agree.
The two consciousnesses, two observers, communicate.
Isn't that where we come into the collective consciousness?
Yes.
It's a bit malted and
but you have choice. Because when you look at the collective, we'll have some differences in the observation.
Yeah.
That goes back to when you're saying about the runner in the race with the eight people.
Mm-hmm.
You can all be winners.
Yeah.
And going back to when you were talking about the Earth, the ship, and us having a shared reality, that's not confusing for me. If we have our own reality, but then we live within a shared reality.
It's going to be very complicated, because we're all one.
Be both true.
It's very complicated because we're all one. There's only a source. There's this one consciousness. Now, this one source, which is infinite, it decided to create something called a universe, which is one little speck. Only 300 billion light years across, it's nothing to a creator. Once it started observing, got into it to experience it, it's now outside and it's big. Then it starts to individualise, spreading out through time and space, creating different pieces of consciousness. Become this piece here, experience this particular time and space. Another piece over there.
Is a shared reality. Is that a good term? Is that
well, they have individual as well, because I'm this piece of consciousness that's experiencing this piece of time and space. That's one part of the whole which experiences all of it. So this one source has many different pieces experiencing different angles, different aspects of the creation. Therefore, when these two things observe one thing, they're quite close, because that's why observe this one thing. They're not millions of light years away. They're obviously here, therefore they're pretty close. Therefore, they're looking at this one thing from a very similar viewpoint, but not quite the same.
But they see the same thing.
Seem, but when you start looking, there are differences.
It's very
well, let's look at, for instance, we all agree, for instance, that Obama's the president.
Right.
We might, for instance, all agree that Obama is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Some people say he's a good president, some people say he's a complete arsehole, which is right.
Hmm.
Your creation is not a different reality, right?
Could change from day to day.
Exactly. And people's observation will change too. And no two people are seeing the same thing. I see a lot of the same, but there's also some differences. Even when you talk about your past, you go back to your family and talk about your past, you all have a slightly different story, don't they?
Yeah.
Because they're in a slightly different reality.
That's where all the blame comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's not.
Yeah, because they've got slightly different paths as well, because their past is also quite illusionary. Can't argue over it. You know, it's like they've got different realities, simple as that. Some things you agree on and some things you don't, because you're in a slightly different reality, although it's very close. And then you also shape that in your own mind and use it and twist it to get a result. We take our past in order to justify our future and our creation and everything. So we first decide an effect and go back another cause. So people talk about the past to excuse something they're creating in the future. They've all got a different idea of the future they want to create, so they've all changed the past differently. That's why they all have a different idea of what really happened. They've changed their past to suit the future they're creating. So they have an agenda, don't they, when they tell you about the past, of why they have a different past from you. They've all got an agenda, haven't they?
But how they interpret history.
But also what they're creating out of it now. Yeah. You take history out a minute, look at your own family situation, you go back and meet your family and have a different story about the past. They've all got different reasons for their past, isn't it, how they've changed it, because they've got an agenda right now. Yeah. So they're first deciding on the effect, then they go back and have a cause.
But they're all producing different futures. Which future's going to win?
Well, they're reaching their own futures in the end, but right now they're arguing with you because they're still living this world of impact and think they have to beat you. So they're actually going around and doing their own future. So it's a waste of time arguing because we're creating our own reality anyway. But people think that they have impact because they don't.
You've only got an aspirin.
No. Welcome the pain. That's mental pain. Separation, longing from understanding.
When the 2012 shift took place, there was quite a lot of people that had a reality that something was going to happen.
Yes.
Other people another. And I remember that year tuning in to several different people and feeling like someone was living on a different timeline to another person.
Yes.
And another person. And then I even tuned in and I got somebody else was in 2075. And I knew that was real, whatever real is. Whether that's not real or whatever. But how does that work with this model? Like, if we can jump timelines, but we're still all in 2015 consensus timeline together.
Because even the timeline is a creation, because that's not real, because time is not linear. How can they have lines when it's not linear and it's expansive?
So how can so many people have, like it's a shared reality?
Because they've chosen to believe in the same paradigm.
In the same time-space continuum.
And they do it in different ways. It's like right now, there's several people living their own private Armageddons. Doesn't mean it's happening in the world, it's happening in their life. The creation is down to your individuality in the end. You're creating your life. Some people are already going through Armageddon, their own little life. Mm. Doesn't mean they can see a big war out there, but their life is falling apart and destroying, you know?
Mm. But you said time is not linear, but things happen consequentially.
No, that's how we experience
it. That's how the watch.
Yes, that's how we create it. That's how we choose to experience it. Look at different lifetimes. They really exist all at once. But when you go to the cinema, say you go to a multiplex cinema, you've got several different screens. These are like your lifetimes, you choose which ones you want to do them in. You go to one time, you can choose how long you want to take before you go to the next one. You can even come out and have a peep in the next one if you want to. See what's going on the other one. They're different lifetimes, they're different screens. You also tend to go with the same people because it's fun to do it with. So you go to often go to many different lifetimes with the same people. You choose how long you're going to go before you go again. You choose what order you do them in. Your next lifetime could be in the past if you want. Once you're outside there, time is not linear. You're looking at the whole.
Past, present, future. The 16th century.
Of course you can. In linear time, it looks like you've already done it. But you might experience that in your next life. Because when you're outside, it's not linear anymore. That's how we choose to experience it now. Your higher self experiences all time and space at once. All your lifetimes it's doing at the same time. But as an individual, you experience this one and see the time as linear. That's a limited perception we have when we've got trapped in time and space. It's not how it is.